From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fifth day of October, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. We'll hear about trade relations with China, the discussion that Ambassador Catherine Tai had yesterday in Washington, D.C., more from it. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled at 537.5. It was down 3.25 on the afternoon. The March at 546, 3.75 lower. In May, futures down 4. They settled at 550.75. November beans at 1250.5, up 14.75 for the day. January 14.75 higher at $12.61. And the March at 1269.5, 14.25 higher as well. December soft red winter wheat down 11.75 at 744.75, and the hard red at 741. 13.25 lower, all of that in Chicago. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Well, first, homecoming here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois is this week. As a loyal alumnus, will you be here?
Well, of course. We'll stop by the fraternity for our annual meetings, and then we'll be heading down to the football stadium and going to be enjoying, hopefully, a victory of the old Wisconsin coach being the new Illinois coach, beating his old team. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, that should be fun. Thank you for coming to campus. Thanks for being an alum. I'll start with the beans because that's the bright spot of the day.
Yeah, it was sort of, we've been seeing a lot of spreading that happened right before and after it was buying of corn and wheat and selling of beans. And I think they continued to roll on out of it. Here today we saw, we got to see the beans get back above 1250 on a closing basis. And that's a real good sign. But, as we look along here, so the weather has been pretty good as getting out. We had Stone yesterday come out with their yield estimates, of course, and they're 176.6 on the corn and 51.3 on the beans. So, a little bit that for their numbers, that was actually a decrease in the corn and an increase in the beans for their yielded. So that was a little bit in the cards today also. So, but really sort of strange. We're hearing tremendously good basis yields or basis numbers, positives in the corn in central Illinois, and yet here we see corn backing up on the day. So I don't know. We had enough rain over here. We're out of the field for another day or two, but they'll get back in the corn soon.
Now, while beans settled in the positive side, you didn't sound convinced that it was a great day.
Well, it wasn't a bad day. It's a good day along the way. But what I'm looking at and the reason I'm not too enthused is 50% of the Chinese crushers are closed down. They're not operating. Brazil is still selling beans through November. They generally were done here by now. So we're getting knocked out of some of the export market here, and it's a little bit unfavorable. But all in all, when you look at the green fuels that we're looking at, and you look at palm oil. Palm oil is, at all-time highs. It's doing tremendous. Canola oil the same way. And bean oil is what's really holding this market together as far as surging up here because, we are going to lose a little. We're not going to export quite as many beans if China holds with what they're saying to China. And with their crushers down, why that does sort of put us in a little bit of a bind that way. But bean oil is the bright spot holding the beans up.
December corn of next year, 2022. Where does it stand today, and does it make a difference where it stands today?
Well, sure it does. It's at 531.25. That's not a bad number out there. We're seeing some people wanting to start to get to sell some corn. But the biggest thing about December 22 corn is what it's going to cost to produce. We're seeing fertilizer numbers that are greatly inflated, and they don't even know if they can supply that. I talked to our local fertilizer guy here, and you can take nitrogen if you want, if you can take it on your farm now or spread it, but he will not guarantee that price for spring because he can't get it in, doesn't have an order really be filled in what's going on. So the fertilizer pipeline is very thin, and fertilizer is very expensive this fall.
And are farmers paying attention to that? I know they're paying attention, but are they acting on it?
Well, one of the problems is it's hard to spread fertilizer until you get your crops off. And basically along the way, do you surge on in there and buy at double the price for, potash over $700? Do you really want to surge on in here? Or do you wait and see if things might change a little bit by springtime? So we're hoping it's the transportation that's holding everything up, and we'd like to see some stuff happen. The real big thing here, though, is the energy. Will there be shortages of coal in China and Europe, and will there be shortages of fuel and heating, especially natural gas and propane here in all the different places? If you look at the natural gas, that is just skyrocketed for what it's doing, and propane is about 3 to 4 times what it was just a couple of years ago. So, some real high, and to talk about shortages because of misplacement of where the inventory is in the energies.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. You can hear him again on our website at willag.org. And while you're there, scroll down the page until you find the calendar. In that calendar, you'll find this Thursday's coming up in red there, Farm Doc Daily webinar series. And now that series has continued all fall long, and this week's is going to be important, especially if you're out of the field, and it sure sounds like you might be. Emerson Nassiger will join us this week. We'll be talking about the MRTN. That's the way the nitrogen rates are calculated, and really whether it is accurate or not. And given the price of nitrogen, it's going to be important that you know this information. So Emerson Nassiger will be here, and Dan Schaefer. They'll talk about the maximum return to nitrogen, or the MRN, the nitrogen rate calculator, and how to use it. You can join that webinar for free. Go to our page, willag.org, scroll down, you'll find RMR10 nitrogen rates for corn high enough in red in the calendar. Click on that. Then there's a website page that you can cut and paste and get yourself registered. Today, I'd like to pick up where we left off yesterday with Katherine Tai. She's the U.S. Trade Representative for the Biden administration's speech in Washington, D.C. on trade relations with China. She was asked after she made the speech if she wanted to talk about the, quote, failed efforts, unquote, of the Trump administration. And she backed that off and said she did not think they were failed, but that they needed a different direction. And then the follow-up question was, well, what is that direction, and how do you enforce what the Trump administration negotiated?
So that is the starting point, because that is the structure and that is the architecture of the trade relationship that we have right now. What I've said in my speech is we will engage on phase one, examine China's performance, have that full conversation with China, while raising our concerns about the larger industrial policy mismatch and the impacts on our economies.
We'll get to the mismatches in just a moment. However, Ambassador Tai did address the Phase 1 trade agreement and whether China can meet that agreement by the end of the calendar year, and some of the numbers she's been following.
Let me just say this. The Phase 1 agreement has a lot of parts to it. The part that attracts the most attention is the purchase commitments, because there are numbers and metrics that are naturally involved. There's trade data that's publicly available here in the U.S. and Chinese trade data. We are all looking at the same data. I think that the questions are going to be in the conversations with China, in the performance and maintenance of this Phase 1 agreement, which is useful and has had value in stabilizing the relationship. How can we address the concerns that we have around China's performance? Let me put it this way. I think that we are going to have and have to have really honest conversations with China about all of the elements of the Phase 1 agreement. These are commitments that China made. They are commitments that our businesses and workers in certain sectors have looked to. We will have to address where this relationship goes from this starting point.
Some of that adjudication could be through a Section 301 investigation, which, if proven, would allow the U.S. to put tariffs back on China.
Section 301 is a trade enforcement tool. It is a very, very important tool. We will look at all available tools in addressing our concerns and ensuring that we are able to defend the interests of the American economy.
One of the big differences, of course, between what the Trump administration and the Biden administration are trying to do with China, and there aren't a whole lot, at least in open, is that the Trump administration tried to do it on its own. However, the Biden administration clearly wants to work with other partners to isolate China and bring it to the table for trade.
I think that this has been out in the open this entire time, and is actually maybe the least anticipated part of the discussion around our strategy. If you look at the settlement of the large civil aircraft disputes earlier this year in June with the UK and the EU, that was about finding a way to manage our own differences between us and converting a relationship of litigation into one of collaboration on shared challenges. And in that sector, the shared challenge certainly coming from Chinese industrial policies.
One of the issues that America has been grappling with as it relates to China is the manufacturing base in this nation, which has been usurped in part by the Chinese economy. And Ambassador Tai, the U.S. Trade Representative for the Biden administration, was asked if it would be important to have Made in America laws passed.
I'm glad you asked this question because it gives me an opportunity to talk a bit about this notion of revitalizing our manufacturing base. I think that in a lot of people's minds, manufacturing is something that comes from an earlier era, that it's something that if we lose it over time, it's okay. I think what a lot of people don't appreciate is that manufacturing, the act of making things, first of all, is critical to our resilience as an economy. And I'll just point to the COVID-19 pandemic that we continue to struggle through, and that scramble for basic goods like masks, gloves, gowns, even ventilators in the early months of the pandemic for us. With a critical level of manufacturing activity, an economy has more adaptability and pivotability than without. First of all. Second of all, I don't think enough people appreciate the degree to which manufacturing activity is a vital part of the innovation ecosystem. We talk a lot about research and development, but if you're just doing research and development and you're not also in the process of translating that into the actual doing and making, you have left out of the cycle a very important feedback loop in terms of how you can continue to make your processes better, how you can make your designs better. And that is something, if we want to be a leader and we want to maintain our status as the world's innovation hotbed, that manufacturing activity is absolutely critical.
So let's turn that manufacturing issue to some on-the-ground problems with other allies, for instance, the EU and the UK, as it relates to steel and aluminum.
I think that with respect to steel and aluminum and the work that USTR has been doing with the Department of Commerce, the engagement with the EU follows the same line of thinking and spirit as the approach that we took to large civil aircraft, which is how do you take a situation of tension and work through it to convert it into a partnership and collaboration. And that is certainly what we are working on and our goal in that exercise.
So again, the Biden administration is trying to work with allies in order to corral China. However, in that process, she was asked whether there might be an issue with the kinds of products the United States is shipping to China and the market access it would like to have to those some 1.3 billion people in that nation.
I think that part of the story of the U.S.-China trade relationship over these recent few decades has been about this thirst on the part of our business sector in particular for increased market access to China. And business sector, I include our agricultural sector, obviously. You know, I think along the traditional lines of the way we've thought about trade and how benefits come from trade, it has been very focused on securing market access. I think that what we've seen is our traditional approach to trade has run into a lot of realities that are today causing us to open our eyes and think about, is what we're looking for more liberalized trade and just more trade? Or are we looking for smarter and more resilient trade?
The moderator for Katherine Tai's speech in Washington, D.C. yesterday at this point said that sounded like an eloquent no. We, quote, don't want more trade with China. She responded.
So, you know, this is a good clarification to make, which is in the U.S.-China trade relationship, there have been sectors that have done quite well. What we are seeking to do is to ensure that if there are things that are working, they should continue to work. But in terms of China's scale, the direction of its industrial policies in particular, and in terms of the speed with which we've seen China accomplish many of its goals, there are a number of sectors and areas in our economy where we can no longer just wish for the best. We've actually got to do something and address it.
The previous question had to do a lot with what people are thinking about China and whether or not the supply chain should be decoupled from that nation, and or even if the United States should trade with China. Here's how Ambassador Tithe is thinking about those issues.
I think that the concern, maybe the question, is whether or not the United States and China need to stop trading with each other. I don't think that's a realistic outcome in terms of our global economy. I think that the issue perhaps is what are the goals we're looking for in a kind of recoupling? How can we have a trade relationship with China where we are occupying strong and robust positions within the supply chain, and that there is a trade that's happening as opposed to a dependency?
Finally, Ambassador Tai was asked about the CPTPP, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or what happened to the Trans-Pacific Partnership after the Trump administration came in and decided that the United States, in its first few days, actually I think the first day of the administration, did not want to be part of that particular trade agreement. What now will become of the United States as it's related to the CPTPP, and how China might be influenced in that process?
So when you say U.S. engagement coincides with China's application, China just applied a week or two ago. The United States has been engaged, has been deeply invested in the Asia-Pacific, Indo-Pacific for a very long time. You know, what I would say is we care deeply about the partners in that region of the world, in particular because I think that competitive pressures on them are, because of geography, particularly acute. In terms of CPTPP, I would say this. The TPP, which is the basis for the CPTPP, was something that was negotiated several years ago now. It concluded, 6 years ago, almost exactly. And the world economy has shown us realities in the intervening years that I think we really have to pay attention to. So, you know, in terms of our continued investment and engagement with our partners and allies in the Indo-Pacific, I think what we need to do is to fully engage.
That was Katherine Tai. She spoke yesterday in Washington, D.C. on trade relations with China. If you'd like to watch the whole of the speech, it's about 17 minutes long, but there's an hour's worth of question and answer that goes along with the speech. It's up on our website as a YouTube video. You can find it at WILLAG.org. Don Day from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, now joins us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the United States this week. Hey, thank you, Don, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I do want to stay in the United States. We have rainfall, or have had, in parts of the Midwest. I don't know how much of it. You can tell me that recently. And then I think it's going to continue for a while. Can you kind of give me an outlook for what this weather should be like?
Yeah, we have an upper level low that's kind of stuck. It's detached from the main jet stream that's spinning around
the lower Midwest and the southeastern United States. And it's just going to kind of spin around counterclockwise here over the next 3 or 4 days before it starts to lift northeastward towards the Great Lakes and New England by the weekend. So as we get into especially tomorrow and as we get on into Thursday and Friday, there's going to be quite a bit of shower activity, thunderstorm activity over parts of the central and areas of the eastern Corn Belt in particular. So there's going to be some shower activity coming our way. There's nothing that indicates, you know, a ton of precipitation, but certainly there's going to be some areas that are going to get a quarter to three quarters up to an inch of rainfall. Then there's going to be a little bit of a break as that system lifts out, and then a storm system starts to move into the western United States early next week.
Well, before we get to that storm system, is it clear in the western part of the Corn Belt this week for harvest season?
Well, that area is going to see the least amount of rain. This upper level low is going to reach back, and it will get portions of eastern Iowa. It's going to get portions of Missouri, but the eastern counties of those states. As you get into central and western Iowa, eastern Nebraska, northwest Missouri, you're going to see less in the way of rain there. So they will be able to make some harvest progress.
Great Plains states this week for the continuation of wheat sowing.
Nothing really going on. While there is going to be some moisture coming up out of the desert southwest, it's going to get hung up on the Rockies. So as you look at Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, right now, the precipitation outlook is pretty low until maybe some showers in Kansas this weekend.
Now, we've heard about next week before. What are you going to tell us about that?
Well, next week, I believe the weather is going to be making some news. We're going to see the release of a very cold air mass that's going to be up on the north slope of Alaska, cutting southeast through British Columbia, then into the Pacific Northwest by early next week. And it's kind of a volatile mix. When you get some really cold continental air building up along the north slope of Alaska, you know, this weekend, they could go below zero up there. When you get cold air like that and some Pacific moisture this time of year, you throw it together, we may end up with a western high plains storm that'll be a combination of rain, snow, and wind and sharply colder temperatures. So we're going to need to keep a real close eye on the northern and central Rockies and the western areas of the central plains, such as the western Dakotas and those areas, as they could be looking at the first major winter event of the year.
Sounds like it could be a rough one.
It could be. There is a lot going on that we have seen before in October storms, where there's similarities with this one to some of the stronger October storms we've seen in the past. So we're going to be watching this one very carefully, especially for livestock interest in those western high plains and central and northern Rockies.
I did not like the way you said that they were going to release a lot of cold air, and all I thought was release the Kraken.
Release the Kraken! It kind of is. You know, I think I'm going to steal that. The cold Kraken.
Hey, thank you, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.